This is not a comfortable time of the year in whatever part of the lonesome valley you are walking in. Trudging through winter, cold, and rain is feeling like it's going on a little too long, isn't it? Our normal ups and downs can feel more prolonged. Mental health professionals have two wise words for us: wait and survive. Wait for a better time, keep on keeping on. And overarching everything, again, is the massive suffering experienced by people in the world. Today, again, as we think of people in Japan and the Sendai area and Libya. And now here we are at Lent, being invited to walk this 40-day journey to examine ourselves and perhaps prune ourselves, or rather be pruned by the Spirit, that we might blossom into discipleship. Barbara Brown Taylor is a favorite author to some of us. She has a way with words. And she tells us how Lent came about. About, 300 years after people were waiting for Jesus to come back, and he hadn't come back yet, church folks got pretty comfortable. They got used to the ways of empire and figured out a way not only to survive, but to get very comfortable. And so the church decided, we were losing that creative tension. We're getting too comfortable, and we needed to remember who we were walking with, those who were still suffering. And so they instituted the practice of Lent based on that good old number 40. You've heard it again and before. Jesus' ancestors spent 40 years in the wilderness. Elijah spent 40 days in the desert. And now Jesus comes along, and these 40 days are built on those old stories. So the early Christians who decided to blend in and didn't want to stick out and didn't want to go to those extreme places of suffering where Jesus went would rather have bypassed this journey, and so might we. But here we are, good church people, and we're starting. But I invite you to consider it will be a rich journey. Well, one of the temptations along the way, as Barbara Brown Taylor says, is to use our pacifiers when we don't have, as Mary was saying, people that we can share our feelings with. Sometimes we're happy. Sometimes we're sad. Sometimes we're scared. Sometimes we're lonely. And when those empty places come, well, guess what? Some of us eat too much. Some of us drink too much. Some of us take too many drugs. Some of us even have too much chocolate. Can you imagine? Some of us shop. You know the list ad nauseum. But the fact is, we reach for whatever stone is at hand when we're wanting nourishment. We reach for what's easy. We reach for what we can get our hands on, even if it's not the right work, the right love, the right whatever that we're yearning for. That is part of our human condition. And that's why we put a sign of the cross and ashes on Ash Wednesday, saying we are just like everyone else. We struggle with how our needs, our deep needs, will be met. So, how do we connect more to our essential self? And as we enter this time of Lent, willing to examine ourselves and willing to live with some of that emptiness, to face it, we also need to be reminded of where we're headed after Lent, just as we said in the circle. We're going to get to Easter. This is what Joan Chittister says about where we're headed. There is a call deep within the human heart, a magnet that takes us first to our true selves and from there into a consciousness of the God who is the call. I have known the call, and still know the call as a vivid daily vibration in my body. Wouldn't that be wonderful? To feel a vivid daily vibration of God in our body, can you imagine? That's where we're heading towards, and it does take daily practice. And we get some spiritual practices to help us on our way and tune in. So here's some of them, which you already know. The first is body and breath work. We're gifted in this generation to have so many methods of being more connected to our body, more connected to our breath, ways of moving. We have chiropractors trained in trauma work. We have Kundalini yoga teachers trained in getting that energy moving up our spine. We have people trained in breathing and walking meditations and in art therapy and in music. It is a rich feast. I invite you to avail yourselves of it during these days of Lent and to discern, instead of reaching for a stone, to find some nourishment from those activities. I heard on the radio this morning, or maybe I read it in the paper, that there's more accidents on the Monday after a time change, to be precise, 17% more car accidents, because our bodies haven't caught up yet. So if we need a tangible fact to remind us to honor our bodies, pay attention if you're driving on Monday. May not be you, maybe the other person, but we need to honor our bodies. Another way of connecting to our essential self, of kind of staying with that empty space, if you like, is to go on a pilgrimage or retreat. Some are pilgrimaging in Costa Rica. Others go to Camino. Others stay home or go to the cottage. But some go on vision quests. There's a time-honored tradition of going on a journey that challenges our physical endurance and comfort. And that brings forward a new sense of what's essential. We might enter there into the Jesus story. So, for those of you who've been faithfully coming on Sundays and know the story, what happened last week? Well, a few weeks ago, did Jesus get baptized by the river and have that high mountaintop experience. Remember that? He's baptized by John, and at that point, here's the Spirit of God saying, "You are my beloved Son, I'm well pleased with you." Well, you'd think that the next thing is the Spirit might come and whisk him into the Garden of Eden, but no. The very next thing is the Spirit whisks him off into the wilderness to fast for 40 days, and on top of that, be tempted by the devil. Is that the reward we get for trying to be spiritual practitioners or follow God? Well, there he is. Barbara Brown Taylor describes the subtle pressure from the devil as suggesting that Jesus maybe deserved better than this God was giving him. After all, we, God's followers and Jesus' followers, may hear a devilish voice in our heads sometimes saying, if we really are loved by God, shouldn't things be going a little smoother for us? If I really am a Christian, shouldn't I be maybe a little happier, more successful, more wealthier? I mean, after all, shouldn't I be safer, richer? Come on. In fact, the Jesus we follow starts off with a ritual. It's called the Examine, a ritual of 40 days of fasting, which is meant to remind him of his fully human condition. One writer, one anthropologist, sees hunger not just as a biological state, it's a theological index of what it means to be a human being. It connects us to Adam, who was created to desire. And when we hunger for something, when we desire for something, we come fully alive, but but we're also open to a range of possibilities, capable of greatness, capable of depravity. That is the human condition. So Jesus is entering the full human condition, not asking or getting special privileges or places or relief, but entering fully the condition that many today, in fact, are in. One of the temptations is that we turn away from suffering. So I'm here to tell you about the happy 400 Anglicans who voluntarily went on a fast over this past year, or rather it's called the food bank diet. Have you heard about the food bank diet? Well, it's such as you might imagine. It's eating for a period of days only what you'd get at the food bank. And these 400 Anglicans started to feel rather weak and sickly in body and soul. Enough to motivate them one pouring rainy day on Thursday to go to Queen's Park and demand a meeting with Dwight Duncan, our finance minister, and say, "We're getting a feeling of how it is not to be comfortable Anglicans, and we're hungry. And we know now how people living on social assistance feel when they can't have juice or vegetables and things." And so the Anglicans have been asking and persisting for $100 to be increased to the social assistance allowance. It's not a lot of money when you think about it each month. But just remember what Mike Harris took away in 1995. If you remember, social assistance rates went down by 21%, and they've never recovered. Well, Dwight Duncan did grant a meeting to the bishop, Linda Nichols, and it was quite a conversation, and the Anglicans are persisting. Our board has written a letter. Some of you have written letters, and we're hanging in there. And as Linda Nichols said, some of us are being invited into a spiritual fast during Lent. Others are being invited to acknowledge the painful reality of physical hunger, and it's these two things that come together. Well, I could say many more about our temptations, but I'm going to focus one again, and I'm going to fast forward here just a little bit. Because one of the third spiritual practices, besides body and breath and movement, besides retreats in the wilderness, is confession. Time-honored confession, served up on a regular basis by our Bible. Psalm 32, which we prayed some of the words for Psalm 32 today, invites us to consider that the best medicine for the soul can be confession. It's an old-fashioned word, but a new way of saying it might be sharing fully how we are, how we're feeling, what we're thinking and feeling deeply. This morning, again, on the CBC, one of my favorite spiritual tools and practices, turning on that radio dial, was the compelling story of a young Aboriginal man. He was 16, already in great emotional pain. He was cutting himself on his arms, hoping that purging his pain through releasing his blood might relieve him. Then his girlfriend broke up with him. And so he did what many northern young men do. He got into his car. And Zoom ended up nearly killing himself, which was the intent. But as he said this morning, he's deeply thankful he failed. He has lots of scars to show for the accident, but he now has a family, meaningful work, and life. And he says he's telling his story because before he didn't share his pain. He didn't confess what was going on with thoughts and feelings that were getting more and more grim. And so he was urging young people especially to bring up what they're thinking and feeling into the sunlight, into the fresh air, to expose it. There's a lot of sun in the desert, in the wilderness, isn't there? And so time-honored confession, in whatever way we do it, is good medicine. Something else I was reading was a study of journal writing. So to simplify it, health researchers found that out of 200 people, The ones with the most severe health challenges were ones who'd faced a trauma, usually early in life, and had never shared it. Then they invited three groups of people to do some writing, 10 minutes a day, for 4 days. The first group were told to write just about the details of their trauma, the facts, what happened. The second group were told to write just about their feelings. The third group were asked to write about their deep thoughts and their deep feelings about what had happened. Well, guess what? The first group didn't feel much better for the writing. The second group that were writing out their feelings felt worse. The third group experienced better immune effects, lower blood pressure, and visible health effects that were tracked for 6 months. So there was something about that full expression of what happened, how did I feel, what am I thinking about it, and sharing it with others. That can be considered a modern spiritual practice of confession. Which brings us to a fourth one. It's the spiritual practice of taking those really hard things that happen to us, pausing before we dish out harm and revenge, and turning it around by offering service. I bring to you the example of an Israeli man, and you can read about this on Spirit Sightings, which is on our United Church website. And if you'd like to know this tool for some of your own meditations, check in with me. In 1993, Udi Roth, an Israeli man, was abducted and killed in what the Irish call the Troubles, as we know that ongoing conflict in the Middle East. His brother Yuval was very angry over the loss of his brother. But then he heard an interview on Israeli radio with a man who'd lost his son in the same way that he'd lost his brother. After the interview, he called him up, and they had an idea to establish a group to encourage dialogue between bereaved families, both Israelis and Palestinians. So Yuval became a member of the group called Parents Circle, Families Forum. Over the years, he befriended many Palestinians. All of them shared a common need. In the apartheid state that is now Israel, as you know, there are totally separate highways for Israelis, and then totally separate horrible little grid roads in the back hills for Palestinians. And you're not allowed, the Palestinians can't travel on the state roads. So, the Palestinians sometimes need to get to a hospital fast, but if you can't go on an Israeli highway, what are you going to do? Usually, women die in childbirth, is what they do. So one day, a Palestinian participant of the group called up Yuval and said his brother might have a brain tumor. He had an appointment at Rambam Hospital, but no way to get there. He asked if I'd drive him, and I agreed. Well, this carried on. He next helped a three-year-old who lives in the West Bank, a little girl with a failing kidney and liver and needs dialysis to survive. But she can't get on the Israeli highway either to get to where she needs to go. So he comes and drives her because he's got the state license plate. I could go into the story more, but I can tell you that he and his group have now driven 90,000 kilometers in 2010 alone. They have now helped hundreds of Palestinians get access to health care. And this is what he says. I lost my brother, but I didn't lose my head. This activity gives me an essence for life. I have learned the price of the conflict is a lot more than the price of making peace. It's going to start with me. We are all human beings in this together. So I invite you to think that another way of returning to our essential self is reaching out, even through the hard and unfair stuff that's happened, and finding ways we can help. I know many of you are doing it in the congregation. The bereavement and grief work that's gone on. I think about Elaine Gort doing that. The work over the years with disabilities and those challenged with disabilities. I see Carolyn Lemon. There's a new book out that Carolyn wants to share with us, and how this community has been part of that journey. I know many of you are involved in reaching out. And as we enter deep in Lent, let us be sustained by some of these practices available to us. Even when we feel like reaching for stones and wish they were bread, we can be mindful of how others have walked. I'll stop with a poem by William Stafford, one of my favorite poets. They want a wilderness with a map, but what about errors that give a new start? Or leaves that are edging into the light? Or the many places a road can't find? Maybe there's a land where you have to sing to explain anything. You blow a little whistle just right, and the next tree you meet is itself. And many a tree is not there yet. Things come toward you when you walk. You go along singing a song that says, where you are going becomes its own because you start. You blow a little whistle, and a world begins under the map. Amen.